Hey guys, it's Cheekies from Cheekies and Chill. Cleaning today? Well, not exactly my idea of fun, but wait a second. Is Fabuloso involved? Because that's different. Cleaning with Fabuloso 2x concentrated cleaner turns chores into fiestas. Fabuloso pairs twice the concentrated cleaning power with long-lasting lavender freshness. From showers to countertops, floors to doorknobs, it leaves your whole home smelling and feeling like a fresh oasis. You may never love cleaning, but you will love a home cleaned with Fabuloso. So make your home dramatically clean with Fabuloso. Pick some up today at your favorite store. Fabuloso 2x concentrated formula provides 2x more active ingredients versus non-concentrated Fabuloso original. Use as directed.
The Specialist Film Will are back, and we are recapping episode number 8 of The Traitors U.S. Season 3. And today we see the end of the coffin conspiracy. The coffin theory has been... What did she say? You want to put the final nail in the lid of that coffin? Like, Sierra actually managed to ham it up while fighting for her life at the round table. Probably, in my opinion, the first dud of the season. It felt so predictable, but I'm curious to hear your thoughts on how you think this is going to progress the game. And we finally heard Sam speak, and we had actually a really fun challenge, I thought, in terms of the backwards nursery rhymes and stuff. So there was some good in here, but that round table was just so bland and nothing exciting happened. But we did get a little bit of a shock at the beginning. I think most, you, me, and Adam all thought it was going to be Tom. And then I said, Chrishell made the next most sense, right?
I said, if it really was going to be Tom, why would they include Tom as the biggest reaction? Especially when you ended on a cliffhanger like that. You don't want to make it like the most obvious person at the end of the episode. And then we start the episode and they reshow that shot. It's like, you're going for shock factor. You're going for a surprise. So I actually didn't think it would be Tom. I thought I said that when we recapped it.
I can't remember what we all said. Adam was very...
Adam was adamant. He was adamant about it.
Yeah,
And he was completely wrong. And I doubt Adam's listening. But Adam, suck it. You're wrong on that one, okay?
Let me text him right now and be like, Adam, Will wants you to know that you were so wrong about this. He'd be like, dude, I haven't even watched this. I'm living my life.
Exactly. I'm on a cruise. I'm enjoying my life. Why am I getting pinged about the traitors and being wrong about it? No, because we had several debates last week, and I thought that was a great conversation. Honestly, I'd love to have Adam on every week. But I wasn't like, oh my gosh, it wasn't Tom, because I thought that they wouldn't forecast it that easily if it had been Tom.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. I think that makes a lot of sense. I think what's interesting about the way that this shook out tonight is that it was Chrishell who ultimately ends up going home then instead of Tom. And their reasoning was, you were just too faithful. And that was so accurate. Like, Tom at this point, yes, everybody knows that Tom is a faithful, but he could still get so cocky after this move, or he could put his foot in his mouth at some point and end up being somebody who does get banished at a round table. Like, he could go home at a round table. You're never going to get Chrishell to go home at a round table. Nobody was looking at Chrishell. You're never going to look at Chrishell. And there's really no reason to ever look at Chrishell. Even whether you're a traitor, like, if you're a traitor, you're not going to try to pinpoint it on Chrishell. She wasn't playing the game hard enough to really ever have her name come up. So I do think that this was the right move. However, now there's the added element that was brought up in this episode, which is there has to be two women. Well, now at least one, but then they were assuming that it was for traitors, two and two. So now they're concerned that, oh no, if the women are dwindling, then the men are going to be thinking, oh, like, it, you know, whatever. So maybe they were regretting getting rid of Chrishell at that point. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong on that. What do you think?
I don't, even if you've decided it's a woman, I think it was like, okay, Sierra, Brittany, Danielle were the names, and those were the names anyway. And I don't think keeping Chrishell around would have changed anything in that. So that's a pretty spot on kill right there for someone who is clearly faithful, who isn't drawing attention to themselves at the round table. I don't have any issue with them killing Chrishell. I think that was a good move.
I think it was a good move too. So we get down to
final. What did you think about the in-person of it all? Like, we got this billing as, for the first time in Traitors history, they're going to murder face-to-face. And for me, this kind of just fizzled out and just a... Like, I don't know how else to describe it. Other than that, like, we had this build-up, and her reaction, Chrishell's reaction was, oh... It's you guys. And they just look at her. It's almost like they are have been told or produced in some way to be very cold and not, you know, be like, oh, sorry, you know, we're killing you. This is why. Like, it was very serious. And it was so serious. And they just, Danielle just hands over the envelope. So serious in kind of like they were hitting this formulaic note of like, we just need to get through the steps and you have to keep a stone cold face. Like, there wasn't any fun to this that I was hoping for. And it had been billed in that way, that you're going to murder someone face to face. And I thought maybe they would do some other form of murder, whether it be, you know, bad example, nailing someone into a coffin, which we will talk about later.
We've already seen.
Or, you know, a dagger, a knife in the back. You know, one of those knives that on Halloween where you press into someone's back, but there's a spring in the handle, so it doesn't go in them. But it I don't know. We have a TV show and an art department and a whole production team that I feel like could have come up with something fun and creative for this moment, as opposed to this like stoic, you've been murdered. Okay, I guess I'm dead. And it just kind of, it fell a little bit flat when I was actually very much looking forward to like this big reaction of like, oh my God, it's you guys. Did you feel that at all? Or is that just me kind of nitpicking this?
Nah, man, this was the first big miss of the season. Okay. It was the first big miss of the season. And I'm not just saying that to agree with you.
No, I know you wouldn't. You would take any opportunity to disagree with me.
I wish I could, but this was the first big miss of the season. And here's the reason. Have you been watching any of the post-game stuff where the players find out who the traitors are?
Not a lick. I didn't even know it existed. Okay. Thank you for letting me know.
Yes, this is, you're welcome. Now you know, and now you can go check it out. But this is something that people were talking about last week on our podcast, that nobody was catching on to the fact that Danielle was a traitor. And I was like, there's no way nobody is catching on to the fact that Danielle is a traitor. So I went back and watched some of the episodes of this. And it's like a little quick short thing of just, I think Julie Berry's actually producing it, believe it or not, from Vanuatu. Yeah.
Wow. Good for her.
So random.
Did Jeff get her that job?
I'm sure. Yeah. She calls up Jeff and she's like, Jeff, I need this job now. Like, let's go. But so for me, as I sit there and as I watch this take place, I enjoy watching those clips because I didn't believe people that nobody was on to Danielle. So I go and I watch this and nobody's been on to Danielle. Wes was shocked. Wes is sitting there going, that's why Carolyn and Danielle were arguing so hard. They're trying to throw us off the scent. That must be what they're doing. Like, Wes is almost saying, like, they're brilliant. Like, this is
crazy. And that's not even the right answer.
And that's not the right answer. And that's what's so great. And that's what I'm loving about it. And this took away that. Like, watching that, and I understand that this is off the show and everything like that, but that is a really fun way of showing the players reacting when they find out who the traitors are. And maybe they can somehow find a way to implement that maybe into like a commercial break or something. You come out of a commercial break, you have 10 seconds of Wes going, Caroline was a traitor? No way. And then it says, go to peacock.com or whatever to find this full video, NBC.com. But that was my biggest issue, is there is a fun way to do this. This wasn't that. And putting them in the coffin is very dramatic, and it's a good visual and all of those things. Doing this in the church isn't as good of a visual for an audience. And especially because I understand that a lot of the stuff they're doing and everything is scripted. It isn't necessarily the first take. There's so many inserts. These are reality TV people who are a little bit of actors. And so there's a little bit of acting going on, Danielle being so cold and stoic, like you were saying. It might look cool when you're in this place, but go stand in one of those European cathedrals and then take a picture inside the European cathedral. It's a lot cooler to stand in it. And I feel like that's what was missed here. There was something lost in translation. And honestly, like, I don't really care that out of all the people, Chris Schell gets to find out it was them, because there was no, oh my God, I can't believe it's the two of you. Nobody's onto it. They didn't give us anything with it. There was no story with it. She didn't say anything. We didn't get to hear Chris Schell's authentic reaction or have her say anything. So I felt like it was a waste. I felt like it was like built up as something, and we ended up watching people walk into the breakfast room anyway.
Yes. And, you know, I really don't care where they do this. I think the concept of a face-to-face murder is good and interesting. And maybe this is just an instance of like, we came up with this idea, we went through with it, and guess what? Chrishell gets murdered, and Chrishell is not the most reactive or emotive person on this cast, though she necessarily wasn't like a bad cast member. I thought she was fine on this show, but she also didn't have a specific relationship or storyline with either Carolyn or Danielle. And so for like us to only get one murder face to face where they're finding out who the traitors are in real time, it's like, it's kind of a swing and the miss with Chrishell. And I don't know if there's anything the show could have done to ham that up other than to produce Chrishell to have like a bigger reaction. But it also seemed like the show was maybe that, like, they didn't want this over the top, because let's be clear. This is a game. This is a game for fun. Whenever you are playing Werewolf or the Resistance or Mafia or a game like this, and you find out who it is after all this time, your first instinct is usually to laugh and go, oh my God, like, I had no idea it was you. You crushed it. I was on to you early, maybe, but then after that one thing, and you explain it. And like, it's very lighthearted and it's very fun. And that might be at the antithesis of what this show is doing too, where it hams up these very serious events, especially we are dealing with the lexicon of the show being murder. And, yeah, you know, we're going to the turret. Alan's always coming up with these little phrases, or they're written for him, of like these deadly sins. And like, there's this melancholy throughout. And so maybe the show didn't want to play into that, but that's where the fun exists in this. That's where the promise came for getting this face-to-face murder, and it did not deliver on that. Again, Chrishell was probably like the person that the show wanted this murder to happen to the least in this particular format of a murder.
Yeah, no, I agree. And Fender has this comment here, 100%, the show needs more dramatic visuals rather than letters and people sitting in chairs. And I don't necessarily disagree with that, but I agree with everything you just said. Like,
but I think what Fender is saying, it's like, okay, every week we should, instead of a letter in a chair and they sit down and open it, we should then be producing some stage over the top where, like, you know, the traitor falls in the pool and is drowned or something, or they're poisoned, or, you know, they're dragged by a horse carriage, who knows? And you could get, and these would all be B-roll essentially. I mean, that's something on House of Villains. If you've seen House of Villains, they have the dolls for each of the cast members. And one of them, once someone's been eliminated, there is like a produced like segment, or not even a segment, but just quick shots. So it could be tying the doll to a big bunch of balloons and then it floats away in the sky. And it's like, that's the sending off of the character. They could definitely do that, but that's not, the show could do that. That'd be fine. They do all the B-roll with them sitting in the bathtub and like flexing in the closet and like all the room B-roll that's selling them actually going to sleep in this castle. But that's not what we missed here. What we missed was the real human reaction. This could be in the woods. It doesn't need to be like, it's not where they were for me visually. It's more the reaction from the players and the traitors themselves was so subdued, because this is the first time the traitors are experiencing this where their identity is revealed to someone in front of them and they don't know what that's like. And it just seemed like they were so kind of neutered on what they were allowed to react to and do. But yeah, again, it's tough when Chrishell is the one being murdered.
I have two things on this. One, they also go and then show her getting in the coffin afterwards. That was such a waste of a clip. Like, that was such a waste of a shot of her laying down and then putting the lid on. Like, and I understand, like, we're talking about the visuals. How can you make the visuals a little bit better where you are doing something with tied to balloons and they float away or something like that? How can you make that a little bit better? This is now the second person we've seen get in a coffin. And the first one with Jeremy was cool. And now we're seeing this and it's like,
was it cool?
No, not really.
See, for me, like, the visuals for me, like, I don't really care. I think the show has a visual language that it excels at regardless. Like, I think the wardrobe is on point. The castle is very well art directed. The challenges are all on some sort of like creepy castle theme. I don't know if I need more of this. It's more that we were missing a human element to this.
And that was going to be my second point. So then my second point with this whole entire thing is, I wonder if this was the first take they got. Because Danielle was so serious and Carolyn's like half giggling, because that's just who Carolyn is, right? Like, Carolyn's not going to be the person you could do 75 takes. She's going to give you what she gives you because that's just who Carolyn is. Danielle's definitely hamming it up a little bit for the cameras here, but this show is definitely taking multiple takes of certain things like reactions or whatever. do you think that like this was the best they had? Do you think that this was all they had? Do you think that this was the only shot they took? Because I agree with you. What I wanted from Chris Schell is what we've gotten from those other clips that I'm talking about that are on NBC, which is I wanted Chris Schell to be like, oh my God, Danielle, I knew it was you, but Carolyn, I had no idea. That's crazy. Or vice versa. Or I knew it was both of you. Or I didn't know it was either of you. I wanted something.
Something.
All Chris Schell did was say, oh, wow. And what confuses me is if it was as weak as it looked on tonight, and we can say, oh, well, that's just because it was Chris Schell. Like, they could have said, Chris Schell, do that one more time. Let's make this a little bit more interesting. Come on, give us something and edit that as the first take. Look, we all know now in Survivor Heroes versus Villains, the Boston Rob, it's getting the best of me. That was a reshoot. That was the second time they did that because they didn't get it the first time. So they literally had Boston Rob like go back and lay down or whatever again. And so that's one of those things where when I look at this, why didn't they just ask her to do more? And then that leaves me wondering, maybe they didn't want her to. Maybe this is from the aesthetic that they were going for. This is what they wanted. And they wanted kind of a bitchy, stoic, whatever, I'm done with you guys. And I just don't get it. For me, this was the first dud. And then with the round table being as bad as it was, I'm glad we had Adam for last week and not for this week, because I don't have much to talk about with this. Like, I feel like I'm going to be more negative, I guess, with this week's episode. And we've been very positive because this has been a phenomenal season. And then we're going to get into talking about, do we like a recruitment at Final 10 as being an option? There's plenty of things that I think we're going to really be a little more nitpicky on in this episode. And it all starts with the lackluster. This is doing a prologue, and the prologue is just like, not good. Like, why did we watch it? I don't know.
Yeah. And people love when we're negative and nitpick, right? That's when the comments are all like, wow, what an interesting podcast, thinking about the aspects of this show.
My wife is trying to save us so that we don't lose it. She says Chris Schell's reaction was especially odd, since she has been so emotive, shocked after all the roundtable reveals. Also, Will, you getting panic attacks looking at the picture?
Yeah, that's the dog that has bit me on multiple occasions, once in real life and a bunch of times in my nightmares. So I remember when I visited your house, because June had already bit me before in LA, and I visited your house in Florida when I was down there. I had a red eye from LA. And so I got into your house and I was like, I need to sleep, because it was like 7 a.m. and I needed to start work, like West Coast work, at like 11 a.m., like 8 a.m. our time. And I just was having nightmares the entire 3 hours of trying to. I'd like close my eyes and then I just have nightmares of this dog just attacking me. So
yeah, that's your sleep paralysis demon is my dog.
Yeah,
there you go.
Especially when I'm in the same, you know, within the same household, like she's gonna rip down the door and come get me. So
there you go. But so Rachel's trying to save us here because we're gonna get nitpicky and pull apart. But the Chris Schell thing, there's nothing to work with there. There's nothing to work with, and. Look, it was, I guess what's coolest about it is there were six-ish people, I think it was six, right, who were up eligible to be eliminated from the game. So that makes it kind of cool, because the cliffhanger from 1 week to the next is who's going to go. But I'm going to be honest, when there's six people and I go 7 days, even though we podcast about this with Adam, even if I talk about it with my wife, even if I text you about it, even if other people are texting me about it, I don't remember who the hell is up for. I remember Tom and I remember Dylan. And I was like, is it Chris Schell? And then when they were like Dolores, I'm like, oh, that's right, Dolores is there. I just couldn't remember.
Yeah. And it also feels, because we have the banishment is, you know, that's what we're used to, or at least our TV brains, like that's tribal council. That's getting voted off. And the murder, you almost, they feel like they're afterthoughts, like Jeremy going home or Derek going home. You're like, oh, wow, we've lost this character, but it's in such a kind of unceremonious way. And then maybe this is to that previous comment, Fender, that point that like they just like walk up to a chair with a letter, and it's very early in the episode, and then poof, they're gone from the show and we never hear from them again. So I don't know if Chris Schell's the face-to-face wasn't anything exciting. I will say the breakfast was interesting for a couple of reasons. And we'll get into that. Also, I agree this episode, obviously weaker than we've had in the past. Maybe that's a large part. I think that's a huge part of Boston Rob. One, not being in the episode, but also eliminating other people that could have delivered good TV. In the road of carnage that he left before him, like, he took out all the possible, like, major players. It feels like, maybe not everyone, I don't want to like hate on the whole cast, but like, he's gone. It's not just that he's missing, instead he took out so many options for good entertainment. I think the choice at the end is particularly thorny. I don't know, because we always say, oh, you can recruit, always recruit. Why wouldn't you? And if you get recruited, always accept it. Why wouldn't you? We saw Peter deny a recruitment last season. I don't know if this is a slam dunk recruit situation. So I think at least we have that very interesting conversation ahead of us.
Yeah. I personally don't think recruiting is a good idea in this situation. I don't, but we can talk about that in a little bit. I want to talk about the breakfast table. That. Yeah, I want to talk about the breakfast table, though. Sam brings up a really good point here. And ultimately, he's wrong, but it's still a good point. And why that's that's, well, here's why I think he's wrong. And maybe I'm wrong, but this is why I think he's wrong. The traders see Allen that night. Do they not? They're seeing Allen that night. I feel like they're, because Allen is sending them in. Are they not? Is he not? He's there at the same time. I feel like the traders and Allen are both there.
I don't know. I mean, the way the show sells everything is that Allen is the eyes, ears, omnipotent presence of this entire show, pulling all the strings. In reality, that's not the case. Allen comes on camera when he needs to. There's a script. There's probably a teleprompter of some sort, and he is fulfilling a role, and everyone pulling the strings are the producers. And so that comes down to moving people in and out of locations. You have 8 assistant directors, you have all that. And like, I don't think they don't need Allen to be like, okay, traders, now go in and do it. I don't know if they didn't film that scene, it's not that we just assume that's happening, though our viewership brains, we think of it like that. We think of this as Allen's domain. And I think that was very much a production hack from Sam, being like, I don't know if the traders would have seen Allen if Allen's job is simply to walk in to the 5 people that were not murdered and have them turn around. Like, who's sending the traders on their way? It's probably an AD. It's probably not Allen. So like, I thought that was extremely valid and almost like kind of a loophole in this segment, and it could have been dire if it weren't for this landing on Carolyn.
Yeah. So, okay. First of all, I thought it was great gameplay until I started thinking about it a little bit more. And then I was like, well, wouldn't they have seen Allen? But it is a great point to bring
up.
Did
they ever see Allen? I don't think they ever did.
I don't know. Maybe they didn't, but it's great thinking from Sam. And this is really the first episode we heard from Sam, and Sam totally butchers the round table, which we'll get to that in a little bit. But in this moment, he says, Tom comes in and Tom explains what Allen was wearing. And I love that Tom's reaction was just like shock and awe at Allen's fit. You know, he was just like, holy crap, that's so sick. But so I really liked that. And then Sam says, ooh, whoever the traitor is, isn't going to know. Carolyn's the next person who comes in, and Carolyn's just like staring at them and mumbling and whatever. But that's just how Carolyn is. Again, like Carolyn could rehearse, recite, and she's still going to give you Carolyn in that, right? It's like Christopher Walken. If you've ever seen a movie with Christopher Walken, which I'm pretty sure everybody has, Christopher Walken has a very distinct way of speaking where no matter what the line is, he is going to deliver it in a Christopher Walken-esque way. That is how Carolyn is. It's going to be delivered like that. And when she's put on the spot, she does get scatterbrained. She does get a little chaotic. We watched a whole final tribal council where she couldn't really explain her game against Jam Jam, even though she had a really good game. And I think that was what made this a difficult thing for Sam to prove. Because then Brittany's like, you're like on the line of passing or failing. So I think you passed. Like, there was nothing more you could do. And had this been a Dylan or had this been Danielle, I think they might have been able to pull something out of this.
Yes. I think if this is Danielle and she's not answering coherently, then it's like, why don't you know this information? Like, why? Like, he's wearing black. All you need to say is that. You don't need to describe his shoes or his hat or his jacket, any particular detail, but like, give us something about what he was wearing, anything. I mean, you saw the guy, right? Like, walked, you turned around, and there he was, apparently, if that's your story. This only works if this is Carolyn. And it got to the point where it's like Sam was grilling Carolyn and the other people at the table were like, dude, why are you grilling Carolyn? So obviously she's not a traitor. Like, she's clearly frazzled about this whole, why are you like, Gabby's like, Sam, stop. Like, what are you, come on. Like, come on. And it's, again, we keep saying Carolyn got dealt the best set of cards this season as a trader. Not only because of like the Survivor connection and that like Rob and her are both traders. Now Rob has just gone out. Like, are they really going to put two Survivor players as traders? I mean, we haven't heard that. I imagine the cast is talking about that in some way. But just by the nature of being who she is, and not even her reputation, just being like currently who she is, her natural reactions to everything and her stuttering and her being like, whoa, it was beautiful in the church. Like, they just totally bought it to the point where it felt offensive for Sam to even ask this question.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Sam starts, if he pushes too hard, then he's putting a target on his own back. And
yeah, then it's like, why are you going after Carolyn so hard? Yeah. So he's like, okay, I got it back up.
It's great logic though. It really was great logic. And like you said, it might almost be gaming the production element of the show. I mean, and that's fair. It might be gaming the production element of the show. So, I appreciated that. They get rid of Chrishell. We already talked about this, and the game moves on. They go and they do this challenge. Oh, what do you want to say?
I think there's something very important we have to talk about before we move on.
Okay.
The one at a time of breakfast we have not seen before. And I think this is like, I don't think I like this in terms of fairness. I like when they come in groups and you can hide the traitors. I think this all but like exonerates Dylan of any traitorhood here because he came in second. And if you're watching this, if you're there as a player, and then you are thinking about the episode and how they're going to deliver this to an audience, well, it's going to be one at a time, that Chrishell or Dylan is going to be the who's murdered. And if that's the case, then Dylan cannot be a traitor. And we had talked about this in season one. They never put a traitor in that last group because yep. That's what they wanted the audience to know. Now, to prevent the players from gaming that in season two and in season three, they put traitors in the last group that enters at breakfast. But when you go one by one, you know those final two people. You know the last person, essentially, is a faithful. And for Dylan to get that, I thought was like setting a pretty bad precedent.
That's a really good point. I wasn't thinking about that because I was going to say, well, what does it really matter? Because we already know that six of them are up for elimination. But that's a really good point because it's if you're thinking about it from a TV show perspective, the audience isn't going to find out, oh, wow, these other four people are safe. Now Dylan is the other name. You know, all of a sudden they're going to bring in the traitor because now there's no drama around the Dylan entrance.
Right.
As an audience, we all know. So that's a really good point. And I wonder if anybody talked about that.
It would be like Carolyn coming in last year. If it was Carolyn or Chrishell, and to everyone at breakfast, they don't know which one of the two has been murdered. But like, you would never do that on a TV show because we know that Carolyn's the traitor, so they have to put someone there who is a faithful, and that kind of just clears Dylan's name. I don't know if he used that to his advantage in any way, but like, that seemed like a bridge too far.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. There should have been two or three. They should have come in pairs of three or twos, something. It should have been something so that it gives some. I wonder if the other players said that to each other. And I wonder if Dylan used that to his advantage. I was the last one in. Why would I
do a trade? I think Dylan seems like a, you know, sharp enough guy to
very down to earth.
Figure that. Yeah, extremely down to earth. Figure that out and then, you know, distribute that intel and get some good grace with his faithful.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. I really do. I like what you're saying there. So let's Patrick Stahl. This is I want to bring this one up. They should have asked Carolyn what her outfit looked like in the chapel. Maybe it just didn't make the cut. That yeah, nobody knows what Carolyn was actually wearing because she just had the robe on. I mean, they could have put her on the spot even more if they wanted to. There's plenty of ways now to kind of game these types of situations when production tries to mix up the usual, I guess, in future seasons, right?
Yeah. I'm trying to think what you would do in Carolyn's situation. If Mumble. Like, but like, let's say you weren't Carolyn, like, let's say you were Phil or Will, I'd be like, what was Alan wearing? I don't like, that's the last thing I was thinking about. I thought I was getting murdered. Mm-hmm. Does that fly? I guess it depends who you are, but like some,
I mean that, I think that is fair. If you're like, I blacked out, I turn around,
and like, I don't know. Like I saw Alan and then I like felt, I like barely saw the guy. I don't know. He was wearing like, he had some sort of like,
cape.
Hat or, yeah, like it's a cape on. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's the last thing I was thinking about.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't know if Carolyn probably wouldn't have been smooth enough to pull that off, but whatever Carolyn.
No, but did, like Carolyn's fine. Just like,
yeah, she's fine. Exactly.
Default Carolyn going, what? It was pretty in there. Yeah. Yeah. Perfect. Perfect.
The beauty of being Carolyn. So let's jump over to this challenge. So we get this challenge where they get split into two groups of five. One group of five will go into the house, which is the Dr. Will house, I think, from last season, where Dr. Will sat on the porch in the rocking chair.
Not the same house, I don't think.
No, but it looked very similar.
Maybe I might be wrong. Built in the same place, probably. Doubt it's the same house.
Yeah.
Maybe it is.
So anyway, five of them go in there, five of them stay back. It's the, you know, they're recording back and forth. They did this in the Traders UK, I believe. That's what Mike Bloom had tweeted out. I thought this was a really fun challenge. It's a very interesting one. There is only one shield out there, and it's for the five people who go into the house. So people were fighting over wanting to do that. Ultimately ends up being Ivar, Sierra, Brittany, Danielle, and Tom, which we get to hear all about Tom's musical prowess in this scene here. Sierra ends up getting the shield. It seemed like everybody knew she had that shield. Everybody kind of saw her grab it. What did you think about this challenge compared to others and the shield mechanism in this one compared to how they went in other episodes?
I remember we got a challenge like this last season.
Bells.
Yeah, the bells, right? And the bird box, I believe, or like a music box with a bird.
Oh, so I'm thinking of a different challenge. You know, I'm thinking of the one where they had the bells within the church.
Maybe it's season one. I'm thinking they've done music recognition challenges.
But there was the bird box too. I think there are two challenges that they combined for one mechanism in this. Where they
and they're relaying over the phone. I'm into this, and I like that this was very silly.
Mm-hmm.
Last week we had the bugs, and it was terrifying, and it was more, you know, you're kind of laughing at them getting covered in bugs and snakes and things like that. But like, this was outwardly jokey. Like Tom is humming just gibberish into a telephone. Everyone's listening to it. So I appreciate the lightheartedness of this. The shield mechanism was fine. I mean, I like how they have to divvy up the teams. And I thought maybe it would be more fun if someone could find it and keep it a secret. I think that's always more fun. I don't know how you do that here. Maybe they did as good of a job as they could by putting it outside instead of inside. But then that's where the phone was. It was outside. It could have been maybe on the side of the house. I don't know. I think the more often shields can be unknown to the group as a whole is going to result in better television, better storytelling, like more room for kerfufflery.
Yeah, that was good.
I was going to say something else.
I don't know if kerfufflery is a word, but that was good. I like
that. Yeah. Just more room for shenanigans and gameplay to really stand out. If we don't know where the shield is, it seemed like everyone kind of, I mean, it didn't matter, obviously, because Sierra ends up getting banished. But
yeah.
This was fun. I don't know if it was like not the best in terms of like fighting for shields, not the best in terms of fighting for money, probably, or visually, but in terms of just like making a segment that we're going to have every episode of making it entertaining and we can laugh our way through it. This did win in that regard.
Yeah. What do you think about the fact that there was only one shield? Because it seems like throughout this season, there's been a lot of people who have been safe with shields, and ultimately the shields don't help you at the round table, but they at least help you with the murder. What do you think that they're kind of cutting it down now that we're down to final 10? Are you happy that they're not making it where it's like six people are eligible for murder and they are making it where technically nine are, even though we know that the traitors can't be murdered?
Yeah, I think that's fine. I think one or two shields is like right in line here, especially when you have two traders. So
yeah,
I didn't have an issue with that.
Okay. Yeah, I was fine with it too. I just wanted to know if you felt differently just because it had been so many people being saved. And we talked about in episode one, it was like more than half the cast was saved from murder in that first challenge.
Yeah, because they didn't go to that last pontoon, which I think early on does help, especially when you have a cast this big. It's like, it helps the audience narrow down, okay, who is even eligible to get murdered here? And if it's like six or seven people, that's way easier to digest when it's like 18 people. So when the cast gets bigger, I'm in on like the amount of shields decreasing kind of at the same rate as the cast is withering down, or maybe even at a deeper rate, at an exponentially higher rate decreasing, where 10 people, you only have one shield. I think that's fine. Whereas like you know, you have 20 people on 10 shields. That's if it's like 50%, I think 50% works better with more numbers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And especially now, if they're going to let them recruit one more, you really can only have one shield, because now it's like, I don't know. I mean, maybe you do need to do more shields so that nobody's eligible to go home at some point, because I'm curious how that's going to work out if they really have 3 out of 10 here. What else happened before we get into that? I mean, the round table seemed so obvious, even though Sierra had the shield. Again, we talked about the shield doesn't help you at the round table. It only helps you from being murdered in the night. So Sierra goes and loses at the round table, and Sierra's out of the game, and that's that.
Do you think her having the shield influenced that decision at all? Like, I don't see why it would, but I just wanted to toss that
question
out there.
Here's my thoughts on this. Okay, here's my thoughts. Sierra can't be murdered. So I actually think it was the wrong move to get rid of Sierra tonight. I think they should have broken up the Big Brother girls, and here's why. If you get rid of one of the Big Brother girls, Sierra can't be murdered. So Sierra is now eligible to be banished at the next round table. And you've eliminated the pair of Brittany and Danielle from working together, right?
Who are you talking about from the Faithless perspective here? Banished.
Yeah. I'm talking from the Faithless perspective. I'm not talking from Danielle and Brittany. Obviously, Danielle and Carolyn, this worked out perfect for them. They're both safe. They both move on, especially for Danielle. She wants to keep Brittany, and it was going to be between Danielle and Brittany if they went that way. So I'm talking about from the Faithful perspective. They got so hung up on this coffin theory that they stuck with Sierra. And I know that they didn't all know that Sierra had the shield, but enough of them did. Where I think you want to keep Sierra safe here. She can't be murdered. So you don't get any information from that. And maybe you're concerned you're going to be murdered. But at least you take out one of the people in the Big Brother Alliance. Because if one of those Big Brother girls is also a traitor, the other one's not getting murdered overnight either. They're going to both stay alive. And I feel like, okay, now you're moving forward. Now you're into the next episode. You don't have Sierra. And you don't have whoever the Big Brother girls murder. Because you're assuming that one of them is in there. If you get rid of one of the Big Brother girls tonight, maybe you get it right. Maybe you get it wrong. If you get it wrong, let's say they get rid of Brittany. Brittany goes home. Sierra can't go home that night. So yes, one of you is going to be murdered, but Sierra can be the next person you banish. And there's no questions about it. So I do think that they got rid of Sierra one vote too early. And Sam says right after, we really messed that one up. And I think he realized, like, we could have gotten more out of Sierra than we got out of her, because he doesn't know that she has the shield because he's not in that room. But maybe he's realizing, like, Sierra was always going to be a target at these tables. And if she was a traitor, who is she going to murder? I don't know. Maybe she murders me. And that's where it gets a little complicated. But I just feel like they got rid of Sierra one spot too early, and they should have kept her around. They should have split the Big Brother girls. They know Sierra's not going home. Let somebody else go. And also, this is a great way to scout out who a traitor is, because we saw that last season with Pilot Pete. Pilot Pete gets murdered, but has the shield, so he doesn't get murdered. And I think that could have been a great way to scout out who a traitor is. Keep Sierra. If the traitors say, we got to get rid of Sierra.
See, this is where that would have really thrown the Faithful for a loop. If they vote Brittany here and Brittany goes home and she's Faithful, and then the Faithful or the traitors have a chance to recruit, and they decide to do that, and no one's murdered, and then Nikki is now like, guys, clearly they tried to murder me and I had the shield. That proves me innocent. And now and we're...
Sierra. He meant Sierra.
Sierra. Yeah. And then that's a whole mess. And now there's an extra traitor, and now you're trying to parse out. I thought the best argument for Nikki... Or sorry, I keep saying Nikki because it's the Nikki and Sierra and the Cobbins. But the best argument for Sierra here was, let's just do it. Who knows if we're right, but then we can just stop talking about it. Like, yeah. Then this theory, we can just put it to rest. Okay. Like, RIP. We don't need to talk about it anymore. And that is why I did not initially love this coffin segment. One, I didn't find it particularly visually interesting. I know, again, people love, for whatever reason, people in coffins, people knock their socks off. Who knows why? I guess it's something different. I thought this gave the traitors so much runway of an excuse and just this like unearned piece of suspicion placed on these two people, and they kind of got screwed by getting put in a coffin. And there was literally nothing Sierra could have done here, and that's why I didn't like it at the start. And it's like kind of paying dividends off now that this was like not a good twist, because it gave us this. And again, I'm not saying that Faithful did anything wrong here. Like, I think if I were Faithful, I'd be like, look, Sierra, love you. We could be best friends. I'm like, we just need to get this. We need to check this off our list. So whether you are or not, it doesn't really matter to me. I just want to know, and then we don't have to like deal with it anymore. Then we can focus our, because either we're right and you're a traitor, great, or you aren't, and great, because now we're never going to think about you again. So I don't know if it was a bad move. Phil, you said it would have been better for them to do like break up the Brittany Danielle pair now and then do Sierra next week. Can't you just take that logic and say, okay, let's do Sierra this week and then Danielle and Brittany next week? I know we have the recruitment coming in, which is going to maybe mess some things up, but like, I think you can just take one of them out next week.
You don't know about the recruitment. So let's take the recruitment out of the equation for now, because they can't possibly know that the recruitment is coming. But the reason why I think it's better to break them up now rather than later is because if you don't break them up now, we are now down to final 11. I believe, right? Because it was 12 to start. It was 12, and then Sierra goes home. So we're down to final 11. So you're down to final 11. The two of them are together. If one of them is a traitor, you have to assume the other traitor is going to be willing to work in that group as well. So now you have three. And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, but they don't know that Carolyn's a traitor. But then some people who are really confident in these other traitors, they might start working together. And now all of a sudden the women are saying, well, you're looking at the women. Screw you guys. We're voting the guys out. We don't want to deal with this. And now you have numbers because Danielle and Brittany are such a pair. You have numbers. Plus, by doing this, you have eliminated one more person that could have been murdered that night. Like, Sierra has the idol, so she can't be murdered this night. Brittany can be murdered. Danielle can be murdered from the eyes of a Faithful. They don't know who the traitor is. Both of those people can be murdered. But if you're assuming one of the women is a traitor, and you're assuming that a big brother is a traitor, you know that they're not murdering the other female big brother. So aren't you keeping
around? I don't think anyone actually does feel that confidently about that, or they would have voted that way.
Yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe I'm looking at it too deeply.
We're just looking at it as if like, okay, they assume one of Danielle or Brittany is a traitor, but like if that's their thought process, then they would have voted for one of them. And I actually think that's where Sierra here really, and look, it seemed like the writing was on the wall. There was nothing she could do. This seemed like a landslide dog pile of a vote.
Final 11. So it's final nine.
And Dolores was even like, hey, like, girl, love you. Like, there's nothing I can do to even save you. I'm voting for it. Like, it was just a complete, was it an 8-1?
It was, yeah. Every single person.
So, unanimous. And I don't know when Sierra could have done this, perhaps earlier, but like, to me, throughout the episode, it was like two rivaling theories here. We had, is that how you say that?
Rivaling.
Rivaling theories. We had on one side the coffin theory, and then we had the other side, the pair of Danielle and Brittany. And the problem with that was you had one person could be the person for the coffin theory, but two people could be the traitor for the Danielle and Brittany relationship. And so it never got to a point where enough people were saying it's definitely Danielle or it's definitely Brittany. We heard arguments for both of them throughout the episode. We heard Danielle mentioning Jeremy's name and then Jeremy getting murdered. Danielle crying and she's putting on this show. We're not believing that. Brittany wrote down, it was Brittany writing down Sierra's name, and that was or Brittany writing down Sierra's name with Rob, right?
Sierra wrote Brittany's name with
Rob. That's this. Okay. It backwards.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, let's set it back. So she has heat. Boston Rob going for Brittany after going for Bob the Drag Queen when Bob the Drag Queen ended up being a traitor, also put a little bit of heat on Brittany. Anyway, we had arguments for all three of these people, but there was only two theories. And it never got crystallized whether the group should have gone after Brittany or Danielle, or there was no movement to specify which one of those people actually are we targeting. And that is on Sierra. When your name is out there, you need to get the votes onto one person. You can't say, I think it's one of these two. Because then no one knows where the votes are going. You're never going to rally enough numbers. I think if she got into Loras, maybe got an Ivor, maybe got, I don't know who, it seemed like it would have been an uphill battle anyway. But yeah. I think that's really where Sierra kind of dropped the ball on at least attempting a rallying cry here to like get the votes. Like, Brittany, it's you. Here are the reasons why. Go after rally votes and make that happen. It's not me. It was just like, I think it's one of you two.
And she played too defensive and not offensive enough. I think
right. That's what yeah. And she didn't pick a target. She picked an alliance.
And that's why I said to Rachel too. I'm like, we're watching that episode. And when they were like, okay, it's time to vote. I was like, well, this is the most boring round table ever. It's obviously Sierra because they didn't even say who it was going to be out of Brittany and Danielle. Like, they didn't even give us the option of which one of them would go home. So yeah, Sierra ends up going home. Let's talk about this recruitment phase here now. So they are giving them the option. We're at final nine. We are at final nine. I said 11 earlier. It's final nine. We are two traitors, seven faithful, and the traitors are being given the option to recruit a third traitor. Is allowing the traitors to get a third traitor at final nine too powerful? That's question number one. And then question number two is, do you think that they should recruit? And number three is, why would Carolyn ever be stupid enough to let Danielle have her way right here and get Brittany on side?
Yeah, I don't know if it's too late. I think if you had asked me this before this season, I would say 100% yes. Like, three out of six feels like just too many. Mm-hmm. But the fascinating thing about the recruitment, and this is what Carolyn's kind of catching Danielle in, is like, okay, you can just recruit a better friend and then eliminate me. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, it's not as if they're playing this team sport where it's like, just because you're a traitor, I want to see all the traitors get to the end and win. They're still playing individual games despite having different roles. So that's where I'm like, maybe it doesn't even matter. Like, it could be, you could put in five traitors, four faithful. Yeah, the traitors are never going to banish if they want to. They can stick together. But guess what? The traitors don't always get along. And if I'm a traitor and it's five traitors and four faithful, I'm going to work with those four faithful, eliminate one of my own traitors so I get more prize money in the end. So, like, I don't know if this is inherently broken. I think if you were playing it as a team sport and, like, if Carolyn, let's say she gets banished somehow, she still gets a share of the money if the traitors do end up winning. I think that's very different. We're talking about a different game with different rules. And in that space, I would say three at final nine, three out of six, and you're just getting gifted one, that feels too late to me. But because it's kind of just an image, the roles lose so much of their meaning as we whittle down in numbers here. Like, it gets to the point where it really doesn't matter. Like, you either need to, if you're faithful, you just need to make sure you're not with any traders. Doesn't matter. But if you're a trader, you're not, like, you have no incentive to be like, I want Carolyn and Brittany with me if I'm Danielle. Like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah, I would have said this is too late in the game. However, I actually think it's in their best interest not to recruit. So this is causing quite a dilemma. And I understand that when they're coming up with this decision, when production is coming up with this decision and saying this is the timeline for the game, they don't know that this is going to be a really big dilemma for the two traders that are remaining in the game, if that's their, you know, cutoff valve, whatever you want to call it. But this is a really interesting dilemma, because if I'm Carolyn, I don't want to recruit. Now, Danielle brings up a good point, and this is where I would be concerned, is everybody's saying that we think there's two women, at least one, but we think there could be two women. So if you're Carolyn and you're Danielle, then what your hope is that you recruit a woman, they figure out who that woman is, that satiates them for a little bit, and then they go after the opposite one of you. So if you're Carolyn, you hope that they eventually get Danielle, and if you're Danielle, you hope they get Carolyn. The thing is, though, like, if that wasn't the case, I don't know if I love this. So it's kind of like, because it's kind of circumstantially based, and it's working out, in my opinion, as an interesting dilemma. I don't think that they should recruit. I really don't. I think they should stick to it. Most people are not figuring that it is Danielle and Carolyn when they're finding out it's the two of them. They don't see it coming at all, especially with Carolyn. I think if Danielle goes home, Carolyn's going to get the option to recruit. Why would you want to keep Danielle? And then you recruit a woman anyway, and now you let that woman take the fall. You want Danielle to go as a traitor Because then you are going to, I don't think that they would just have Carolyn play the rest of the game as a solo trader. Maybe they would, maybe I'm wrong. But if I'm Carolyn, I'm sitting there going, no way. No way. Nobody is on to me. You have to be feeling good about the way you're playing the game. Danielle is playing much sloppier than you. I wouldn't want to recruit.
Yeah, I think the right move here, and this is only if Carolyn and Danielle were on the same page playing as a team, would be, which they're not. So, yeah. So I guess this is all out the window, but just in terms of like trader theory as it goes for future seasons, the move here is to recruit a woman, someone like Gabby, someone who they're not, neither of them are like super attached to, although Carolyn and Gabby seem to be pretty buddy buddy, and throw as much heat on them after you recruited them, get them banished. They have to go in the circle of truth or whatever and say, I'm a traitor. And now we have traitor blood, female traitor blood. And now it's like, hey, we've gotten three traitors, two men, one woman. It could be anyone at this point. We don't know if there's been recruitments. We don't know how many we even started with. Mm-hmm. Like, who knows? But that is enough to like, now it can, it like clears everyone's like demographic information.
Yeah.
From being used for or against them and whether they're a traitor or not. So that would be the move if they could agree. Now, where this becomes complicated is that Danielle is choosing Brittany, who is like her best friend. So Carolyn knows that's that whole plan, which is optimal play. And I think Carolyn probably knows that's optimal play because Carolyn is actually like a strategic genius. She just doesn't articulate herself well all the time. She's always making the right reads here. She's like, no way, I would be an idiot. And so if you're Carolyn, she is better off saying, you know what? No, let's just kill someone. So let's take the murder.
Yeah, and because everything you just explained in the ideal gameplay world, Brittany and Danielle would do to Carolyn. They would go after Carolyn, pin it on Carolyn, and let Carolyn be the sacrificial lamb there. And that would be great for Brittany and Danielle because now Brittany and Danielle, like even though Brittany has suspicion on her, and people are looking at Brittany and saying, ooh, Brittany might be the person who goes. They're looking at Brittany. Brittany comes in and she starts playing with Danielle and Carolyn. Now she knows it's Carolyn. She's going to start planting that it's Carolyn to everybody. Get Carolyn out and then hope that Danielle goes before her and nobody's going to be looking at her. So I think it would be totally stupid. What's the rule, do you think, if they don't come to an agreement? You think it's like it defaults to murder?
That's a very good question. I imagine it defaults somewhere. It's probably whatever the show wants. Like, okay, if you guys cannot agree, it will go to recruitment. And then if you can't agree on who it's going to recruit, we will then randomize it or something. If they really want to make it a more fair game, I would imagine it defaults to murder, just like the status quo of how the show works.
Because, I would think it would default to murder. Because
like, there's no reason to recruit a man, right?
No, zero. I mean, what are you going to do? Recruit Dylan? And then you recruit Dylan.
A man, and then even if you throw him under the bus, it's like, okay, now there's three male traitors. There has to be one woman. It doesn't do anything for you.
Yeah.
The only reason you would recruit a man is if you convince the other traitor that the man is neutral when in reality that man is on your side. So like if Carolyn and Dylan were best friends and Carolyn could tell Danielle, like, I don't know Dylan that well. Like we're okay. He seems to like you. We could be a team. And then once Dylan's in, you say, all right, let's throw Danielle under the bus.
And the thing is though,
like that's the only real reason to recruit a man right now.
And out of the men who are left, none of them are that close with any of them. And then Dylan kind of screwed himself when he freaked out Danielle and Carolyn from coming out of the bookcase room. I think that screwed him from ever being considered a recruit. And you're not going to take Ivar. And you're not going to take Sam. And you're not going to take Tom. Like, it doesn't make sense to recruit a guy at this point. There's none of them are close with any of them.
Yeah, no, you'd have to have like an under the radar, sneaky, secret alliance with one of the men remaining. And then you could use that to your advantage to throw the other woman under the bus.
Here's what you really need to do.
But I think it's better if they just don't recruit. I really do. Yeah, it's better for both of them. Because either one of them is going to go after the other once they get a third person in there.
And here's how you strategize this. If I'm Carolyn and Danielle, they're saying, it's a woman. We think it's a woman who's a traitor. We think there could be two women traitors. Great. Murder a man. Go to the round table. Say to all the other women there, they think it's us. Let's get rid of the men. And you don't play this looking for the traitors. You play this to get rid of the men. And then you murder a man the next night and you banish one at the next round table. And now the final five is the women. Figure it out at that final ceremony.
Yeah, but
who's the traitor and who isn't. And you know what?
Who's pitching that idea?
Well, who's pitching that idea? I think the women could all be pitching that idea. I think that's a very easy thing to bring up and say,
right,
they're coming after us. Let's do
that. That seems like a very traitor thing.
Well,
to here's pitch the other thing, in order to get survive a few banishments. Like if Danielle pitches that idea, Danielle is getting banished. And if you are someone who is a faithful woman right now, let's say Dolores, if Dolores pitches that idea, I also think that draws an insane amount of unnecessary heat to her. If there was a way to like anonymously write a note with that strategy, I think that you could get everybody on board. But the person putting that idea forth would get so scrutinized that I don't think it would be worth it.
The thing is, where Danielle and Carolyn stand, the next two murders have to be men. And I think you are better off murdering a man than recruiting a woman at this point. Because, yes, then you could do whatever, but both of you aren't going to win if you recruit a woman at this point. I think you'd have one winner. So,
and you're splitting the money fewer ways. Yeah. I don't know why. Like, that needs to be a consideration here. And I think the show should, like, own it. It's like, if you're adding a player to the team, that's a third. Like, that's what you're getting, a third of less money. So it's
let's say they murder a man. Let's say they murder Dylan, because let's just, for argument's sake, they murdered her. Dylan's gone. Now you come back and everybody says, you know what? I think it's finally Brittany, or I think it's Danielle. Who's going to come up with the women's alliance idea? The one who's being targeted. And they're going to say, they're just coming after me because they're shooting blanks. And I am a faithful. So now if they kill me, they're going to say, oh, Danielle's a faithful. And now they're going to come after the next one of you.
They're going to come after you guys here. Yeah, okay.
That's the argument. So it's whoever gets targeted brings up that strategy. And if you're Carolyn and you're Danielle, you just keep murdering the guys.
God, the show would hate that though, right?
I don't know.
Because, like, it's great. I mean, fans of, like, strategy and the gameplay would be very big fans. But, like, it goes against the premise of the show, which is to find the traitors and banish them.
That is true.
To have an openly, like, at the round table, we're talking through a whole strategy where we don't care about who's a traitor. Show is not going to be too thrilled with that. And might even obscure it in the edit, even if it were to take place, to be honest.
Yeah, maybe. I don't
That's
know.
Always the problem when we get down to the end. It's like, it's not a game about who's a traitor or who's a faithful. It's about what the actual relationships are that can get you to the end and can get you the most money as possible. I mean, obviously they dictate in, like, you need to get rid of all the traitors, or if you're a traitor, you need to make sure you are alive. But, like, now we're in it. Like, Final Nine, it's like, you need to just rally up friends, like, whether they're faithful, like, figure that out later. Just make sure you get to the end without being killed or banished.
Yeah. And if you get to Final Five, they're not revealing whether you're a traitor or a faithful this time.
Which is great. That should have always been the case. Yeah.
Because then if you, let's say you did have a Final Five of all women, it's still like, okay, now we have to figure out which two women are the traitors. And at that point, you're just trying to get rid of everybody. Because you're the only one you can trust is yourself, right?
Yeah.
So... I mean, look, there's a lot of talk to be had, and maybe I'm coming out of this episode a little bit more positive. Like, this podcast, this is almost like a 1 hour therapy session where now I feel better about the traders again. I came into this podcast rolling my eyes a little, but that was good.
No, I thought the end really, like, the decision to recruit or not, I think it's the best it's ever been in the show. Yeah. And I think that's particularly interesting whenever you can put characters in a dilemma that's an actual dilemma. Like, we see so many contrived, fabricated choices in reality TV across all these shows where there really isn't a choice. And to have one here that is like, makes all sense in the world for Carolyn to not want to recruit, and all the sense in the world for Danielle to want to recruit her best friend. So we'll see how it shakes out. But I do appreciate that this is like a real argument and not something that's like, you know, are we putting coins in which birdcage is going to lower during a challenge?
Yeah, this feels
like there's actual stakes and there's actually a reason for either side. So not the best episode of the show, but it's been a really good season. So, like, it's okay. We get one of these and we had a fun conversation.
And we're going to have Parvati next week. And Kate. Can't wait to have Kate back on my screen. That's right.
I've been dying.
I love Kate.
Dying for Kate.
Kate's my favorite.
Back, you know?
Ever.
She's not.
Anyway. Season one Kate drove me nuts.
I forget. See, I watched season one at like double speed.
Yeah. Season one was like, well, we're going to podcast starting in like 2 days.
I had we didn't even podcast season one. We podcast season two. And no,
that's what I was saying. Yeah.
Yeah. I watched season one having no idea I would ever. That was before I was even back doing like the specialist. Survival. Like that's when I was still not even, it was Alexa, you know? So I watched that never thinking I would have to talk about this on any public forum. So.
And here you are having to remember. What was the name of the third? What was the name of the non-famous trader?
Cody.
That was one of the famous ones. That was Big Brother.
Oh.
It's Christian.
Christian?
Yeah. You did get there. You did get there.
I was going to say that.
You did. Yeah. I appreciate
it. I only remember that because of like this podcast. So.
Yeah. Anyway. Well, let us know what you all thought of the episode. Let us know in the comments. Like this video. Subscribe to the channel.
Traders is a hit. People love it. If you know people watch the Traders and they're looking for like just an hour of conversation about the show, share the podcast with your friends because there aren't that many Traders podcasts. And I think Phil and I have had just throughout this whole season a really strong discussion about this show. I think we even cover it some ways better than we cover Survivor. Maybe we're too much fanboys of Survivor. We know it too well. We're coming at this from like not maybe experts of the show. And I think we break it down really well. So share the podcast if you can. It goes a long way.
Yeah. All right. That sounds good. Everybody, listen to Will. Share this podcast. Let people know that we're doing this. Like this video. Subscribe to the channel. If you want our Survivor coverage, we're in the full swing of the preseason. We had an episode of Peridium last night. It was really good. If you want to enter to win some contests, go ahead. Check that out. Deal or No Deal Island is picking up. All of a sudden, our videos are getting more views because people are like, wow, this show is actually really entertaining. It takes them 6 episodes every season to figure out it's pretty good. And Australian Survivor starts Monday. So we got a lot of stuff going on. Become a patron, patreon.com/specialist. Otherwise, we'll see you guys later. Have a good night.
See ya.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.